name is Tolis, I'm an addict. And you'd excuse me, tonight I'm a little bit excited. A couple of my very, very old friends from my early days are here tonight. And I've been excited all week about it. And I remember the times that they looked after me and took me by the hand and took me to meetings, etc., etc. And the times that they listened to me moaning about, you know, A, B, or C, and the tragedy of the day, so to speak. I was impressed by you, Louise, earlier on, because I remember you in meetings not being able to share and being shy, etc., and volunteering to do the chair. It's a big difference. And I think that there is nothing about recovery that I need to be shy about. We're talking about an H&I commitment. Somebody said it's not a big commitment, meaning from the side of the perspective of time and involvement it takes. However, I think H&I commitment is quite big because it saves people's lives. And there are people in the room that, you know, I've met in H&I meetings, and now they're clean and they're doing well. And that gives a whole meaning to my life too, as well as, you know, the effect it has in their lives. I was lucky that I got clean when I was 25, and you know, everybody had a message for me then. Mark is sitting over there, and Mark was younger than me, and he was clean, and he was clean before me, so I thought, if he can stay clean at that age, maybe I should stay clean. There were other people. I thought that recovery would not work for me because I came from another country. And even today, you know, when I'm sharing, I think my English is not going to be good enough. And I've been doing these things for many years, but still get nervous beforehand. So I had a lot of reasons of why recovery is not going to work. And today I was at work, and we were doing a training course about innovation and creativity. And there was, you know, thousands of quotes that the guy was firing at us, the guy who had the trainer. And every quote I heard, I was changing into a recovery quote because I was bored. So he said, Winston Churchill said, success is going through a series of failures with great enthusiasm. So I thought, recovery is going through a series of failures by not picking up and by being honest, willing, and open-minded. And that's what has been my recovery. I arrived here as a heroin addict with, you know, I was quite, you know, physically I was quite damaged. I didn't find that till a lot later, but I was quite damaged. And really, I couldn't foresee life without drugs. And I arrived in London. I had an uncle who said, come over here. And I jumped to the opportunity because it was other than that of going to the Greek army with a habit. And it wasn't really much of a choice, you know. So I arrived here, and I was, my uncle used to live near King's Road. So as I walked through King's Road, I found a pub called the Chelsea Potter, which suited me, looked like my kind of place. So I went in there, started drinking in there. Then lunchtime, they had the audacity to close the pub, to which, you know, in Greece, places don't close. So I took it personally, and I thought it was a personal insult to me. So I got into some kind of scuffle there, and this guy who was sitting in a restaurant next to it called Picasso's came and sort of separated us. He said, leave him alone, he, you know, he's drunk, can't you see, you know. And he bought me a coffee, and The guy had longish hair and he was dressed all in white. So he said to me, what are you doing? So I said, I came here and I'm going to a detox. So he said, good. Which detox are you going? So I told him. He said, good. It'll be all right. Things will be all right for you. And I never see him, you know. Again, I went to the detox. I came out 8 weeks later. And who is in the meeting? The one, Mr. White guy with the long hair. And I said, who is this guy? He looked a bit sort of quite funky. He says, this is the rabbi. I thought, God, what kind of place is this? Now, this was his nickname, and he was a DJ. So I liked him straight away, you know. And recovery in the early days for me, it was either manic depression and self-pity, or exciting moments like this. You know, meeting the DJ called the Rabbi, who gave me 3 tickets to go to a club called the Limelight. So it made it bearable in a way. Made recovery bearable. But taking the bus, the 36 bus, to go bus to Queen's Park, to a godforsaken place where I was living, it felt like punishment. Recovery felt like punishment, felt like hard work, and felt like it's not going to last, it's going to break very quickly. I'm glad to say that I haven't used from my first meeting, and I'm not saying that to make myself sound clever or better or whatever. It's just what happened. I had, you know, times in recovery that I felt like using. I had a couple of times that I went to school and I didn't use, and that's another story. We have these CDs here, and at the time we didn't have CDs, we had tapes. So I remember I went to see this woman that I liked in NA, and she was using. But, you know, I thought, so what, you know, I like her, we'll be all right. I'll 12-step her and she'll be back into the road, into the light. So she said to me one moment, she said, told us I just have to go to the toilet. Now, she went to the toilet, you know, getting impatient and rather amorous. And she takes a long time in that toilet. 10 minutes gone, and 15 minutes gone. So I'm bored, and there's a tape recorder next to me, so I pressed it. And the voice came, it was a chair a woman did in a London convention, and she said that, and then she said, I thought I fell in love, but I ended up living with a using addict, and then I ended up using for 5 years. Now, I don't know about anybody else, but somehow I had the desire to stay clean. I had the character defects that were consuming me, whether it was lust or jealousy or, you know, whatever. But I had that willingness. There was always that little bit of in there to make me take the right turn in the crossroads. And that's, I don't know if that's, you can call it whatever you want. I call it, you know, God's grace. I try not to complicate things. It's not religious, you know, but I think that at certain points I've been looked after when I couldn't look after myself. Having said that, a lot of the times I did the right things. I went to lots of meetings, and I still do. You know, I'm nearly 50, and you know, I haven't got kids and stuff, so I know people get involved with that, and maybe they don't have as much time. But also, it's part of who I am. It's a few years back, my sponsor asked me to do an exercise and picture myself in my funeral and, you know, what would you like people to say about yourself, Thomas? And it made me realize that, you know, this is not a rehearsal, that if I'm going to make, you know, my mark into this world, I have to start now and I have to be pretty quick about it. And what happened was, you know, when I was 8 years in, I found that I had serious health problems. And I thought my life was over and, you know, I'm going to snap it tomorrow. What's the point in staying clean? But I remember walking down Hampstead High Street, you know, towards Belsize Park, and I had tears in my eyes. And the tears were, they were gratitude tears for having had then 8.5 brilliant years in recovery. I thought, even if my life finishes now, I'll be happy. And that was, you know, 14 years ago, and I'm still, you know, going strong. But I didn't believe that that was possible. I didn't believe that going through the difficulties of life was possible without drugs. I didn't believe that it was possible to have fun. You know, I was a few months clean and somebody said, come down to Battersea Park, let's have a kickabout. And it was the first time I had great fun. Now, I say that, I couldn't walk for 2 weeks after that because, you know, I damaged myself. 2 weeks later, I got into a fight with somebody who picked up a bottle and he wanted to, you know, attack me. And, you know, I was giving him lip. And somebody put his hand around me and say, cool it down. His name is Max the Axe. So, one thing I've learned in NA, however hard you think you are, however tough you think you are, there is always somebody else. And looking back now on those days, I look at this with great affection. It looked like magical time to me. However, if I'm really honest, there were a lot of times of up and down, depression, fear. I had to be dragged out of bed to go and fill in an application form for a college. I couldn't do it. It was something beyond me. I didn't have the capacity to take one step at a time towards something wholesome. And I still now find myself putting that, you know, those barriers in my life. One of the New Year's resolutions that I had for the last 15 years is to go to bed early. So between 11 and 12, 20 past 12, I keep looking at this clock in my house. And I'm watching television, and I think, Tollis, remember, you want to go. This is the new Tollis that goes to bed early and sleeps a full 8 hours. And I just can't do it. And I wake up in between so 3:45 and 4:45, and read for an hour, and eat about 4 mandarins or something, you know. And but those are the little details. Somebody I heard said what spirituality is putting the important things first. And important things are not things, are people and, you know, the people who are near me, the family, the close friends, you know. And I've made mistakes in all those areas. I remember my ex-wife once said, what do I have to do to talk to you? Do I have to go out to the telephone box and call you like your sponsors call you to speak to you? Is that your way to give me some attention? And she was right. At the time, I was indignant. At the time, I said, you don't understand. You don't understand what it means to be in Narcotics Anonymous and work in the program. But now looking back, I could see that I have missed the wood from the trees. I have completely put the important thing second. And today, the Jesuit today said something about rationalizing about not being able to be honest with myself, and said by working the steps, I'm going to make mistakes, but eventually I'll have to face the truth. And that has been the case, you know, many times. And and I don't know if sometimes I always joke, I'm a sad case, I haven't got a life, that's why I go to meetings and that's why I do service. Might be. It might be. I don't really know, to be honest with you. What I know is that there was certain situations in my life that happened which I felt completely lost. And somehow, by having Narcotics Anonymous in my life, kept me focused into wholesome stuff. You know, I wouldn't say spiritual, I wouldn't say, you know, the good stuff, I wouldn't say, but I know that I have the self-destruct button. Couple of weeks ago, I had an argument with my girlfriend. I walked out of the house fuming because, you know, that's how I get, you know, over, I don't know, something silly, like she said to me, "Wash your plate," or something. And I walked out, you know, fuming, ready to sort of destroy my life. And, it's real. And the first thing I thought of, where I live, there are not a lot of shops around, so I thought, I'm going to walk to the 7-Eleven and get some cigarettes. That's it. But it was very cold, it was, you know, around the snow time, and it's about 10-12 minutes walk there, 10-12 minutes walk back, so I thought, nah, don't be silly. So I came back in, and it amazes me, the self-destruction that I have, it's the same that I had when I was using. I'll go back, my father had a small hotel and I used to work with him, and I remember once I arrived late and I could see in his face disappointment and, you know, you fucked up again, you know. And we had an argument and I walked away, and I took my works with me and I went to this derelict building. And in Greece at the time, the pharmacists wouldn't give you needles for 1 or 2 meals. They'll give you only 5 meal ones. So I'm trying to, I have no veins by then, so I'm trying to find a vein, the 5 meal syringe, which is that long. So I'm butchering myself. But somehow, because I'm so angry and with myself, but I blame my father, because that's my natural reaction. I'm butchering myself, and I'm standing there, and the blood is dripping, and I don't care. The more I see, the more off I get on it somehow. And that's the kind of self-destruction that can still be in my life. Doesn't last very long though, and a lot of the times I don't act on it. And that's why I keep coming to Narcotics Anonymous. That's why I fell in love with Narcotics Anonymous. I can't explain it any other way. It's... I think you can be as cynical as you want about Narcotics Anonymous, but there are so many miracles, day after day after day after day, that come here, and I see it. And if you... I was lucky to hang around for some time, and I've seen a lot of miracles here. I've seen myself, first of all. When I first came in early recovery, I was constantly depressed. And 2 years on, we had the World Convention in London, and I was asked to share on a topic called Lighten Up, Brighten Up. So When I was asked to share in that workshop, I said, what do you mean? So they said, Tony, you have seen yourself when you first came in. So it was because people had seen the change in me, they asked me to do that. And it's like seeing people, you know, who would sit at the back, wouldn't dare say a thing, then suddenly standing up and celebrating 10, 20 years. And, you know, there are people here in this room that, you know, I've known for over 20 years, 25 years, some of them, and, you know, somehow I can see it in others, how things work, how things don't work sometimes. And I do what I did in the front line, you know. I watch people that I like, my heart goes towards them, I spend time with them. Some people I just don't click with, and that's okay too, you know. I wish I could, you know, be able to click with, you know, with them too. But generally, in Narcotics Anonymous, I have picked up probably 3 or 4 major resentments towards people here. And the funny illness, this one, because when I was, while this was going on, what was saying to me was, why do you need to go to meetings? And then my other defect saying, who is there who's going to push you out of the meetings? So sometimes, you know, tenacity in perseverance helps. I see my sponsor, you know, sometimes, and one of the things he always said to me is, he has an analogy, you know, the black horse and the white horse. The black horse is the illness, the white horse is the, you know, the recovery. So he said to me, which one are you riding today? Car, you know. And it's quite difficult, that, because I suppose sponsors are there to inspire, and sometimes I feel with people I sponsor, sometimes it doesn't work. I try my best, they try their best, it doesn't work. And I don't know why it doesn't work. I cannot really put my finger on it. Sometimes I'm lazy. Sometimes I don't give it time. Sometimes I cannot stretch my heart enough, you know, to love them for who they are. And I suppose they do the same thing to me. But sometimes it really works. And so I would say, if you have a sponsor that doesn't work for you, there will be somebody who will. I love my sponsor, and we have a relationship that's very equal these days. The other day he rang me, and because he was having a problem. And it's funny, because I don't really know what to say. I'm never lost. When a sponsor of mine rings me, I'm never lost of what to say, you know. I go into the parent mode type thing. But when my sponsor rang me the other day, I just want to tell him I love you. That's all I wanted to tell him. And I want to tell him that I have great faith in him, and I know he's going to do the right thing. And many times, when I call him with a problem, he doesn't say to me, work your step 3 on this. He said to me, Tolis, would this matter in a year's time? Which is the step 3, but, you know, in a different word. And that's what sometimes I need that, because the program is very alive, and it's very soft, and it's very caring, and it's very real at the same time, very practical. And I like that. I was asking him, you know, what shall I do with this? And he said, Tolis, I can only advise a course of honesty. So be honest. Forget all the details and the things. Just be honest, be straight, you know. And when I was writing the steps, I hated doing it. I thought it was some kind of an intellectual exercise for people who like writing things and, you know, the college graduates, probably, you know, if you've gone to, not a polytechnic, but a university type thing, you know. And, but when I worked my step four, and my sponsor gave me a list of character defects. Now, I could speak English, I could look it up in the dictionary, I could understand them, but I couldn't understand how they apply to my life. The word self-centeredness was, I drew a complete blank. I said, what do you mean? If I don't see the world through my own eyes, how can I see it? He said to me, keep working. And when I started sort of understanding a little bit with his help and stuff, it was like somebody turned the light. I was in a dark room, you know, full of chairs like this, stumbling, falling, you know, trying to make sense out of life. When I was 4 years by then, I had read all the self-help books, The Roddler's Travel, all that stuff. I knew it by heart, I could quote you things, but I hadn't looked at me. And when the light was turned on, I couldn't blame anymore. I could see things, you know, a lot of things that happened in the past. Sometimes people, I suppose, wronged me. And I could see that, it's very clear. But what my sponsor said then, he said, Tolis, you might have had a shitty childhood, but you don't have to carry it with you now. It's time to get free from that. And at the time I couldn't understand it. I couldn't see it, I couldn't accept it. It was beyond my means. Now I can see what he means. And a lot of the times, you know, now in my life, the health situation is something that bothers me, scares me. A lot of things that, you know, I see around me kickstart a process that could potentially lead to self-pity. But I have known that the moment it kickstarts, I can see it, it flashes, a bit like a bubble, and then it goes, because I know that the reality is that today I'm okay. And my sponsor always says that, how are you feeling today? Today I'm all right, but, how's that? What, I've read an article that says, you know, you turn green and, you know, your nose is, ooh, you know, whatever. And he says, how are you feeling today? I'm okay. You know, and I can see it in a lot of areas of my life. You know, I thought that by coming to recovery, I'll be very successful financially, I'll be very successful there. And then I look at what do I call success? What do I call success? And, you know, it's different for everybody in this room. And for me, success is to rebuild some of the damage I've done, to make a difference with my life, in other people's lives, to do it with a sense of fun, to be creative, I like that, and in a way to be, to stay young. And Narcotics Anonymous, I don't know about how other people feel from my generation, but it helps you stay young. Not young in the sense of, you know, pierced belly button young, but in a sense of, you know, new ideas, new concepts, new music, new creativity, and I love that. And somebody you said it earlier on, it's about everybody. Everybody's welcome and everybody's different and everybody's accepted. And I love that. And my friends are from late 70s to, you know, late teens. And where I work in a university, and it's quite funny because a lot of members go there to study. So I'm walking around in my suit, you know, trying to be a manager type thing. And suddenly, you know, this guy turns up and gives me a hug, you know, some, you know, 3 meter by 2, you know, tall bloke, you know, and says, "Hi, Tolis." So my boss says, "Who's that?" "That's my neighbor." What can I say? You know? And it's funny that sometimes I've learned to deal with it and take it with a sense of, you know, fun. But I just on a serious note, my father died about a year ago, and I'm going to go to Greece for the memorial, the memorial. And that's something that when my dad happened, I had a phone call. My mom talked to my girlfriend and she said, "What happened?" And it was a shock, you know, when I first heard it. So booked the tickets, went there. You know, when some people seem to know what's the right thing to do in these situations, I'm the kind of person, I'm always lost in these situations. I don't really know what to do. I don't know the protocol in weddings, memorials, birthdays, christenings. I don't know the protocol. I've never learned, I've never cared for protocol, to be honest with you. So I turned up there. My mother started, "You've got the wrong suit, the wrong tie. You can't go like this. Don't put this tie over my dead body, you're wearing that tie." And I'm ready to explode, because here we have a funeral, somebody we supposed all love, and we're talking about the tie, the goddamn tie. You know, who cares about the tie? We go without tie. But for her, seemed to have, that was important. What other people would say. And I hated that. Since I was a kid, she would say that and I'd be ready to explode. I went to the funeral and they were crying, and I see my dad in the box. And every time I looked at my mom and my sister crying, I felt like crying. Every time I looked at my dad, I felt at peace. And you know why? Because I made the effort over a number of years to build a relationship with him. And we went on holiday together, just the two of us, we had a laugh. And it has always been a very difficult relationship for me. It has always been very antagonistic and very, I suppose at times quite aggressive as well. And over the years it changed. Maybe he mellowed and I mellowed too, but became very, very close. And he started sharing with me sometimes how he hated it as a kid when my grandfather was beating my grandmother. And he said to me, "Tolis, I've never said that to anybody. Nobody else knows about this." He said to me how he felt, you know, when his brother was taking all the praise in the family because he left, you know, home and he went abroad and became quite famous and successful, etc. where he was there looking after his parents, his family, his brother, his alcoholic brother, the other one. And for him to open up after has been a stone wall for many years, it was amazing. So when I was looking at him, I felt at peace. Now this would have never happened unless I had, you know, sponsor who guided me and said to me, Tolis, your recovery today, my dad came here to have an operation a few years back. I said to him, oh, I can't really look after him, I'm busy, I have work. He said to me, Tolis, grow up. Your recovery is about being with your dad now. A bit of a Vinnie Jones stuckle, that one. And he was right. He was right, because I avoid responsibility. I'm allergic to it. But when I take it with a sense of fun and seriousness, but without being heavy about it, it works out well. And quite often I have this feeling of dread when there is something new about to happen in my life. Give another example. I'm getting married in the end of the month, and I went to a meeting once, and I shared about it, and I said, you know, I'm quite nervous, and all the girls were, oh, you should be excited. Well, the truth is, there is a part of me that's excited, but there is also a part that feels a bit like going to the dentist. not because I don't love the person, it's not because, it's a bloke thing. it's again the protocol, it's again the idea of, you know, building something on a one day, you know, something which is a lifetime commitment. It's a bit, I don't know, I'm wired up this way. But again, it's about growing up and doing it with a sense of fun. And, you know, the other day I found myself, you know, riding my scooter, and I sat there and said, I'm getting married, yeah. I like that, you know. And then I asked the price of different things and went down again. But that's such is life, you know. I just love Narcotics Anonymous, and I love being clean. I can't think of why, you know, I used in the first place. Now, because some of the highs hitting are so much better than, you know, the highs of drugs. I had good time with drugs, don't get me wrong. But I felt in recovery that there were times where it was a lot more fun. And, you know, times where sitting on a beach in, you know, in Thailand or in Costa Rica or in Nicaragua or whatever, and, you know, sharing under the moonlight and being with people I love, and, you know, it's special. So I'll leave it to that. Thanks.